It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Last week, we shone a light on the absurdity of the anti-war protests now sweeping the United States. It's fair to say that my interview with the self-styled performance artist known as Crackhead Barney caused a bit of a stir. Many people questioned why I had her on at all. Well, did I really expect to get any sense out of a diaper-wearing demonstrator who'd become infamous by harassing Alec Baldwin in a coffee shop? The answer is no, probably not. But that was kind of the point. The protest movement is being overrun by ignorant virtue signalers who are shifting the focus from where it needs to be, a brutal war and humanitarian emergency in Gaza. Too many protesters on both sides are making this all about them. We've lost sight of some home truths. So let's be pretty clear. It's entirely possible to be anti-Israel in terms of its government, but not anti-Semitic. It should be entirely possible to have serious moral arguments against the way Israel's prosecuting this war, but not call for the total eradication of the Israeli state. You can be anti-war without chanting from the river to the sea and defending a murderous death cult. You can debate the issues without making yourself the central character. This week, the focus should be on Rafah, the southern Gazan city where more than a million people have sought refuge from the Israeli assault on the rest of the strip. Israel is poised to invade it. Its critics believe civilians will be sitting ducks with nowhere else to go. Mass casualties will be inevitable. Well, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says the US is the only country in the world that can stop Israel from attacking Rafah. And President Biden has told Israel to go no further. But can he really stop them? And should there be consequences if Israel does ignore the US and presses on with an invasion, despite its most important ally not offering support? Well, to debate this, I'm joined by the Egyptian podcaster Rama Zain and by the son of Hamas's founder and former Palestinian militant Mossab Hassan Youssef. Well, welcome to both of you, both returning to Uncensored. Let me ask you first of all, if I may, Rama Zain, since we last spoke several months ago about all this, this war has continued to rage and tens of thousands of people have died in Gaza. And it's quite likely, if there is a full-scale invasion of Rafah, that tens of thousands of more civilians may die in the process of Israel, as they put it, getting rid of Hamas in its entirety. What is your view of where this war now is?
It's sad to see that a few months after, we're regurgitating and having to repeat the same things that we've warned about since day one, that things are getting out of hand, that at one point do you start calling someone who keeps inciting these war crimes a criminal. So not having having held them accountable from day one has led to the audacity and the confidence that we are witnessing in the crimes. And just as you had stated, now that there might be further violence onto Rafah, you don't know if the U.S. is even able to stop them. And we mention Gaza, but we don't even mention the West Bank. We don't mention what's happening in other places. And again, this allowing them to continue with their blatant war crimes that, by the way, their soldiers are filming and sending them to one another on Telegram channels and other social media channels just goes to show to what extent they are confident to continue as such. And it is scary. We've We've seen news that probably the ICC is going to be calling Netanyahu in as a criminal and for trial, and the U.S. is aiming to stop that. At one point, you have to take a stand that enough is enough. It is sad that we are repeating what we've started, what we had been saying from day one.
OK, let me bring in Mossab Hassan Youssef for your response to that. I should point out that the ICC is not just threatening, apparently, to bring in Israeli leaders, but also Hamas leaders. Mossab Hassan Youssef, you said, I think, in the Times of Israel last week, we need to go into Rafah now, not tomorrow. What are we waiting for? We finish Rafah, we finish Hamas. This will remove them from power, which will be the first step towards peace. Of course, the contrary view to this is that if Israel does go hard into Rafah to try and eliminate Hamas completely and kills potentially tens of thousands more civilians, that the global support for Israel will completely evaporate and many people will view what is happening there as a war crime. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, I don't think Israel should compromise its security because of global pressure, because this global pressure sooner or later is going to go away. Now, people are traumatized by the tragedy of Gaza, and many people are making irrational decisions. In my opinion, if we don't end Hamas and remove them from power, like at least to remove them from power, we are going to have many other wars. This is not Hamas' first attempt to take hostages and to take civilians as human shields. They've done this many times already. And I don't think that we need to give Hamas one more opportunity to destabilize the region and create a major war like this.
But is there not a danger, Mossab, that by doing this the way Israel is doing it, by flattening most of Gaza in the process, by killing so many civilians, including women and so many children, because of the age demographic of Gaza, with half the people there being children, is there not a danger that by trying to do what you've just said, in trying to get rid of Hamas, which many people, I'm sure, in Israel would love to do, and I understand completely why they have a desire for that to happen, that by doing it, you actually end up achieving the opposite of making Israel more secure, that you create a whole new generation of people radicalized by losing their children, their mothers, their wives, and so on, and they become even more determined to exact revenge?
Yes, well, Israel is fighting for its very existence. And I am also fighting for my very existence. When there are people out there who want you to cease to exist, this is when they push you to the corner and you have no other choice but to fight. I'm in the same position. How it feels like when you have hundreds of millions of people who sentenced you to death because of false narratives. And this is why we have this trouble in the United States and a global chaos, because people are in denial of the truth that Israel is not targeting civilians on a purpose. They are not killing in Gaza for sport. This is what Hamas did on October 7. It was an actual genocide that the world doesn't want to admit. Now, even though the ICJ judges, they say it was not a genocide. What's happening in Gaza is not a genocide. This is what the judge say. But then we have all the wannabes and the social media warriors and the low-grade journalists selling public that what's happening in Gaza is a genocide. And we simply say it's collateral damage. Two different things.
Okay. Ramazan, here's my question for you.
Can I say
something? Let me just ask you, first of all, what should Israel have done after October the 7th? If not go after Hamas, the people who perpetrated it.
I just need to respond. Mr. Hassan, I truly do apologize that your type of relationship with your father has led you to this quest to condone the annihilation of your own people. I truly am sorry for that. But just as you said, it is not about you. Unfortunately, what we're seeing today and how we're seeing it, it is bigger and it is older than Hamas. when you look at the Palestinians, predominantly, for example, yesterday there was one protest with predominantly Christian Palestinians, it is much more than what we are seeing today. The right of return, the fact that, you know, it was actually quite interesting. You have some Zionists here telling the pro-Palestinian protesters, go back home. And their response is, we want to. So come join our protest so that we can have the right to return, end the siege. Whatever you do, and you just said, you know, you have, at one point you get so oppressed, there you have to fight back. You just said that. So what ends up happening, and you have to understand that, as everyone and Pierce on your show, so many people have said the same thing. You are going to keep having more resistance as long as you don't do something about it. And you keep speaking about the hostages. What about those that are being abducted from the West Bank? What about those that are in prison? What about the children that are in prisons? At some point, you have to stand up and say that this cycle has to end. And how does it end? By changing your tactic, by putting those that are the perpetrators accountable. And you, sir, are stating that it is not a genocide. It is, even the intent for genocide would label it as a genocide, which we have seen from occupation leaders calling them subhuman, Ben Gavir asking for a nuclear bomb to be dropped at them. And I wish to reiterate, I understand that you have had your personal issues, but like you said, it's not about you. It's a collective movement to end the cycle of violence.
Okay, let me give...
And you need to realise that.
Okay, let me give Mossab a chance to respond. I mean, the suggestion is that you are driven by personal enmity because of your family situation, with your father being one of the founders of Hamas, and you've since renounced that side of your life and that part of your family. What do you say to that charge, that somehow you're driven by that more than anything else?
Right. Well, it is not only personal. It's fundamental. What I did during the Second Palestinian Intifada, I risked my life on a regular basis to save human lives from Hamas' brutal suicide bombing attacks, because Hamas terrorism did not start on October 7. We're talking about waves of suicide bombing attacks that targeted civilians indiscriminately, where Jewish, Christian, Arabs, Muslims were killed during Hamas attacks. So our job was to stop Hamas from blowing up things, buses, markets, beaches, beach houses. They targeted everywhere. Hamas' strategy of using civilians or targeting civilians is not a new thing. Now, for me to be sentenced to death for saving a human life because there is a belief system that says so, well, I totally reject that. And they want me to cease to exist. This is not a relationship between father and son. And by the way, I don't need your pity. My relationship with my father was an excellent relationship. I loved my father and he loved me. I'm sure he still does love me. But this is where we draw the line. When the higher interest of humanity is at risk, when people kill hundreds and thousands of civilians by the name of religion and by the name of ideology, somebody has to stand up. I am a son of that conflict, and I know exactly what's going on there, not only from the Palestinian point of view, but also from the Israeli point of view. Then you invite me to come join a revolution. What revolution you are talking about? You are just creating chaos. It's the revolution only for the sake of revolution. At some point, some 30 years ago, I believed, just like you. Today, I know a different truth. And I don't advocate on behalf of a revolution that does not have sight, that does not have any moral compass, that is a revolution only for the sake of revolution. So before you tell me about your revolution and about your protest, tell me about your objectives. What's your goal? What's your agenda? What's your agenda? Who is your leadership? The American parents have the right to be concerned when they see masked men on campuses We don't know who the hell they are. They could be activists and they could be the devil. So parents have the right to say, we don't want masked men with foreign agendas on our campuses because you don't have a leadership. And tomorrow, if the shit hit the fan, who is going to be held accountable for this situation? Who do we go after? Why your protest is not registered according to the American laws? You are just creating chaos, borrowing some victim narrative from the Middle East and trying to Americanize it, trying to globalize it. And what we say, as a person who lived the 1987 Intifada, we don't want Intifada in America, we don't want Intifada in the West, and we most certainly don't want a global Intifada.
Okay. Rama, before you speak in response
what
to that... hang on, Rama. I want to just... Because last week you spoke at the University of Southern California at one of the protests, which was just referenced by Mossab there. Mm. I want to play a clip from what you were saying there. Just take a listen.
We are patient.
We are patient.
We are resilient.
We are resilient.
We are proud.
We are proud.
So that was you addressing a crowd there. I mean, nothing incendiary in what you were saying there, but we have seen many of these university protests, people openly talking about Intifada, openly talking, chanting from the river to the sea, others brazenly supporting Hamas. Can you understand why Jewish students at these campuses feel so threatened by this?
Really? Because when I was there, they were predominantly Jewish students who were protesting. They were predominantly Jewish students that were protesting. Even in the UCLA one, I don't know if I'm able to say his name, but one very prominent Jewish scholar was side by side with me in the protest in order to, because at the end of the day, we felt bad for these students because they're the ones facing police brutality. As Mr. Hassan said, they're the ones facing infiltrators who are attempting to discredit them. It was bizarre to see one student pose as a pro-Palestinian protester and then write inciting chants on the ground. And quickly, the pro-Palestinian students rushed to scrub it off. At the end of the day, though Mr. Hassan wants to make it into this political endeavor, again, this is older and this is bigger than Hamas, and it is much bigger than you, sir. What is happening now is these people, these students, are simply stating the slaughter of children is wrong, the siege is wrong, abducting people for liking posts in other parts of Palestine is wrong, the harassment of women continuously is wrong, and the fact that we're having to even debate this is the most bizarre thing of the 21st century, because you're having this... Because you'd hear about Vietnam or you'd hear about Iraq, but it wasn't so recorded as much as this genocide.
But let me ask you this. So let me ask again, you this, Rama. Let me ask you this. Because I asked you a question earlier, which you haven't replied to yet, because you wanted to say something else at the time. So I'll ask you to you again. How should Israel have responded to this terror attack on October the 7th? 1,200 people were massacred. And the people who perpetrated this, the Hamas terrorists, they were brazenly broadcasting a lot of their despicable acts of terror to the world, proud of it. How should Israel, when presented with an existential threat like that, and when the Hamas spokesman responds a few days later by saying, we're going to do this again and again and again if we can, how should Israel have responded?
But Hamas leadership has also tried again and again and again to call for a truce and bring back the hostages, which has been denied from Netanyahu.
That's
regurgitated.
I don't think Hamas should be given any credit for keeping hostages. They kidnapped Holocaust survivors. They kidnapped babies. They shouldn't have been kidnapping anybody. So they should be giving back the hostages anyway. But my point to you, which again you haven't answered yet, I'm curious what your answer is. How should Israel have responded
to such a
grotesque terror attack?
Both of you stop cutting me off. I will continue.
Well, just answer the question. I won't cut you off.
I would very much like to continue.
Yeah.
No, I will answer the question the way I see fit, the way I talk. You are not going to school me as to how to respond, sir. Now, to my point. 7th of October did not happen in a vacuum. Another bigger problem is that you've had lies being regurgitated by officials from the 7th of October. I urge everyone to check www.techforpalestine.com, which gives the truth and the proper research as to what's unfolded on the 7th of October.
We don't need to read anything. Look, you can't revisit.
You do need to read. Keep cutting me off. This is the most bizarre conversation ever.
I'm not cutting you off, Rama. I'm challenging you, as I will, by the way.
You can challenge me once I am done.
Hamas broadcast what they were doing to the world. You don't need any report when you have people literally showing you on social media what you're doing and boasting about it.
It is very, you know, something that I've realized through these debates is that it doesn't end up being a debate. It ends up being that I'm trying to convince you that Palestinian life is worth it.
But I agree.
Is as important.
You don't have to convince me at all.
It is quite
scary. I completely agree.
Why are you trying to convince me that Palestinian lives matter? I don't even have a response to this. This is a very low conversation, sir.
You said you're trying to convince me that Palestinian lives are worth it. I said, of course they're worth it.
I'm not trying to convince you what... But you're not acting like it is. If you saw that, you wouldn't be bringing me back to the 7th of October.
But that's what started this whole war.
You'd be talking to me about the 40,000 Palestinians who've been killed.
But October the 7th started this whole war.
Really?
Yes. It did.
That's not, again, this is, thank you for pointing out the exact issue that we have here. When you bring it to the point of that this started from the 7th of October, that is the problem.
This war started October 7th.
The issue of this
there was a ceasefire before that.
No, sir. No, sir.
Well, there was.
No, sir. I am very sorry to say that, that Palestinians living the way they were as second-class citizens on their land even, and not just in West Bank
or Gaza. It's a different question, to which I would say I agree with you.
Definitively, that is definitively the point.
Rama, I agree with you.
Sir, you oppress a people, then let me finish. If you agree with me, what are you agreeing with?
I want you to answer my original question about how should Israel have responded to that terror attack? It's a straightforward question.
Because
what should they have done?
Your question... By ending the siege, by ending apartheid, by realizing that this is not a sustainable solution to keep oppressing a people. I'll tell you something interesting. There is blatant attacks, like I blatantly kill you. But there is something that we don't realize that hurts sometimes even more. The intangible, the disrespect, the checkpoints. One day at one of these checkpoints and the amount of disrespect these people have to go through. The fact that at one point in the West Bank, a settler can just walk into your home, waltz into your home, destroy your home, take it, and be backed by a soldier. The utter disrespect of having so much injustice. There was this one Palestinian who said, our heart breaks every day over 100 times. What on earth? How is this sustainable? This is the longest siege on any place in history.
Okay, let me ask Mossad Bamberi.
Of course you're going to have a 7th of October. Of course you're going to have resistance.
Yeah, actually, here's my problem. I'm going to go to Mossad now, but here's my point about that. I would say that I agree with you. A lot of the settlements, particularly the expanded settlements in the last few months that we've seen, are completely outrageous and indefensible and should not be happening. I completely agree with you. But when you say that, of course, October 7th is going to happen, no. Absolutely not. There is nothing to justify a terror attack on that scale. Let me go to Mossad, we've been waiting patiently here.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Britain feels broken, but how do we fix it?
Westminster just doesn't seem to have the answers, but we have found some people who do.
Join me, journalist Becca Hudson.
And me, the former MP Ed Vasey, for How I'd Fix.
From the price of a pint to the housing crisis, this is the show where we take an alternative look at the problems plaguing the nation.
And hear practical solutions from those in the know. Catch new episodes of How I'd Fix wherever you get your podcasts. Rebuilding Britain starts here.
Come on, you're going to Mossem. Right. Mossem, let me ask you about that issue of the settlements. What is your view about expanding settlements in the way that Israel's been doing? Because it seems to me that they are crossing a line when they do that, which is completely indefensible.
Well, speaking of settlements, or what so-called settlements, those are cities of hundreds of thousands of people. This was the result of the 1967 war when the Arab countries united wanted to annihilate the state of Israel. Arabs had their opportunity back in 1948 to declare their independence. They had equal opportunity like the Jewish people. The Jewish people fought the British colonialism and they shed blood. And eventually they earned their independence. But in 1948, instead of the Arabs declaring their independence, they declared war against the Jewish people. There was no such Palestine at that time. There were just Arabs. And in the British era of colonialism, Jews, Arabs, Druze, Christians, everybody in that area was called a Palestinian. The Palestinian is a colonial entity. It was not a country, and it was not a nationality. It was just a 25-year period. So now, when we convinced ourselves that we were Palestinians because of Yasser Arafat wanted us to be Palestinians, the chaos had begun. And now, Palestinian is nothing but the victim narrative. That we don't want to take responsibility for the choices that we have made. 70 years of conflict. And how many opportunities the Palestinians, or what so-called Palestinians, it's not a real thing. There are Arab children, they have the birthright to be there, and Israel has 2 million of those. So the allegation of apartheid doesn't make sense. It's just a broken record by all those who have been trying to delegitimize Israel. It has nothing to do in reality. Then the victim narrative goes on. The 1967 borders, this was area which is the West Bank. It was under the control of Jordan. And the Gaza was under the control of Egypt. They were Egypt and Jordanian territories. It was not a Palestine. Today, Israel has peace with Egypt and with Jordan. So when the Arabs launched a war and they lost the war in 1967, Israel captured some territory. This is the consequences of war. This is and the Arabs don't want to accept the consequences of defeat. Instead of saying we were defeated and Israel won, now they played the victim card. They have been playing the victim card for 70 years. And instead of accepting what is on the table to coexist with Israel, basically Israel was willing to withdraw from the West Bank and Gaza. That offer was on the table in 2000. And Yasser Arafat rejected that because the revolution has no purpose. The revolution is only for the sake of revolution. Bunch of con artists who only want to gain money and power. This is their game. And they have been using Arab children, Arab and Jewish children.
Was assassinated after the Oslo Accords?
Please let me finish. please don't interrupt me, please. I did not interrupt you. So now the situation got out of control. The false narrative of a victim became global. It's definitely a bestseller narrative, but it's not a true story. The very basis of it, the very foundation of what so-called Palestine is not real, because in reality there is no such thing. Now, to build all these false accusations of apartheid, of genocide, of ethnic cleansing, only the Jewish people in the Middle East suffered ethnic cleansing and displacement. Only the Jewish people. The Arabs did not suffer the same consequences of the 1967 war because Israel did not force them to leave the territory after the war, while Egypt, your country, gave the Jewish people a 24-hour notice to depart Egypt. But the Jewish people did not do the same towards the Arabs. And this is how we have 2 million Arabs in Israel. So all the accusations, they're just baseless. And this is how they have been spreading lies to delegitimize Israel without telling us even what Palestine is. What does it stand for? Is it a nation? What do they want to achieve? This revolution and this global chaos, what's their ultimate goal? I would like to know. And most importantly, who is their leadership? Is it the Palestinian Authority? Is it Hamas? Is it the Islamic Jihad? Is it this new generation of pro-Palestine that they are irrelevant to the suffering of the Arab and Jewish children of the region?
Let me go to Rama for your response. I mean, what is the answer to that question? Who is in charge of the Palestinians? Who should be in charge going forward? Do you see any role for Hamas at the end of this war?
It's not up to me. As Mr. Hassan clearly stated, I am Egyptian. This movement is for the people of Palestine. And it is very dangerous what you said, Mr. Hassan, because this maybe is what even started this whole thing when you had a group of immigrants coming in and stating this is a people without a land for a land without a people. There was always a people. They were the people of Palestine. And especially when we talk about history, you have to also note what was happening in the rest of the world, that this was a point where most countries were colonized and there was this whole movement to decolonize, then there was nationalism. You can't just give this brief history lesson without talking about it in length. And if you want to do so, we can by all means do so, but I don't think we have the time. And so the most important thing to note here, just as I clearly stated, when we were at the protest yesterday, it was predominantly Palestinian Christians, because you have IDF soldiers having this, the one church that is left in Gaza is under siege, where a mother went out because she needed the bathroom. They shot her. And then they shot her daughter who came to help her. This is what you are dealing with. Sir, what peace are you talking about for a person to be able to look at a child that is starving, that is running towards aid and shooting them? If you're not going to stand up now, when you see such war crimes happening daily on your phones and not say that something is very wrong right here, what are you expecting the world to look like after this? What are you expecting with the polarization, with the hatred that is then going to ensue? People are so hurt. There's the videos that we are having to watch daily now of families trapped under rubble. In what world is it normal for a mother to go get aid and come back to find that her house has been flattened, that her family has been slaughtered? These are thousands. How is it that in mere 5 months, we're talking about a 40,000 casualty? These are not numbers. These are people with stories. How are you justifying what you are justifying when a son finds out that his father has been killed so easily? What do you have to say to this person? What do you have to say to this child in the West Bank?
Let me ask him what he has to say. Mossab, your response to that.
Look, very important to understand the origin of suffering. And the cycle of violence is a very long, vicious cycle of violence. And I think the root cause of this is the false narrative and the victim narrative. Instead of taking responsibility, we blame everybody. The suffering of the Gazans, do you think you are the only ones who see the suffering of the Gazans? You are not the only one.
And the West Bank.
But in war, people suffer.
Palestine. Please, sir.
I am from the West Bank. This is my birthplace, and I know what's going on there, and I know all the con artists who have been hijacking generation after generation. They don't care for the children. They don't care for humanity. Their game is for power and money. This is what they do. So now the situation in Gaza, we call it a human shield situation, a society that has been hijacked by Islamists who don't value life, their purpose in the other life, not in this life. Hence, they want to destroy Israel and they want to destroy all other civilizations. And this is why we don't accept this. Then it doesn't matter what
this
happened
before
October 7. October 7 cannot be justified as resistance. What happened was barbaric. What happened was savagery. What happened was beyond any imagination. This is what ethnic cleansing and genocide really means. When you kill communities, wipe them out because of their religion, because of their religion and ethnic background. What's happening in Gaza, not because of the ethnic and religious background of Gazans. What's happening now in Gaza, because it's their governing authority, choose to make a stupid stunt and wiping out 20 peaceful Jewish communities that they had nothing to do, including kidnapping babies and elders and women. And what is this? We are in the 21st century and we have to stop these savages before they become an empire. It's our responsibility to fight. And the foot soldiers in Gaza, let me tell you something. Those soldiers, they have families. They are humans. They are my friends. They are sacred warriors who are fighting on behalf of civilization to stop savages from taking
your
over.
Your sacred warriors.
So don't tell me about the suffering.
Your,
the suffering,
sir,
of Gazans is the outcome of Hamas taking human shields. This is the outcome. This is Hamas
what
crime.
What about the suffering of Palestinians
Israel
in the West Bank and other
areas? Israel is not committing
a
crime against humanity.
Okay,
Israel,
I think, look,
is fighting in Gaza.
Rama,
following all war protocols.
I'm so sorry. Can
you
just say
Israel,
one thing?
Listen.
Let me just say something.
Important. This is very important. Israel is following war protocol in Gaza. Hamas broke every protocol, moral, universal protocol in this war.
Well, it may be, of course, that it turns out Israel has been committing some war crimes in Gaza. We will see. But let me ask you, Rama, you wanted to ask a question directly of Mossad. What was that?
Yes. I think I forgot, but I want to just say one thing regarding what you said, sir, about the foot soldiers. Your honorable foot soldiers have been filming themselves boasting their war crimes in dinosaur suits, I believe, as well as donning Palestinian female lingerie of dead and displaced Palestinian women. I would assume that would enrage you as a Palestinian. They've also been recording their war crimes that have been used then, that have been taken and used in criminal courts, and if anything, have just showcased the audacity and the confidence that they have when they conduct their war crimes.
So what is your question?
Also stated, you were. I honestly forgot the rant put me off. So
okay. Well, let me end by.
Oh yes, I do. I remembered. I'm sorry. Okay. I remembered. Sir, you say that you use very big terms. How would you then describe the slaughter of 40,000 people? And away from Gaza, I want you to explain to me how is it that you find it normal and what you expect of a child that is taken and kidnapped from his home, from his family, from the West Bank.
Okay.
Is it normal that you have children being charged with under military law? Is this something you believe is sustainable?
Okay, let me give the final answer to Mossad.
Well, are you talking about baby Kfir, whose first birthday was in Hamas captivity? Is this the child you are talking about? Because Israel does not kidnap children.
I'm talking about thousands of children, sir. No,
policy.
They do, sir.
Even there is no such thing as thousands of children. The entire Palestinian prisoners,
there's
they
no
are
such
not
thing
even
as a child,
in the thousands,
it seems,
to
in
say
your
that,
eye.
Mostly children. And please, when you say war crimes, you're just repeating like a parrot whatever you know they told you. There is no war crime. Israel is following the war protocol in Gaza, and I will never take the cover of those soldiers who are risking their
Sir,
lives
anything,
on a regular basis.
Sir, if anything, you are the one that has been repeating
soldiers,
yourself as a parrot.
Look,
I have
Israel,
silently listened
listen,
to your
listen,
rant of
let
a
me
narrative
help you,
that
let
is
me help
being
you.
Abducted, and yet
Israel
you keep pinpointing on Gaza. If you want to help me,
Gaza
you are
Strip.
Going to discuss what is
but
happening in the West
do that.
Bank.
Instead, they sent...
What about the hospitals that are being bombed? What about the universities? What about the hospitals?
Hamas?
What about the universities? What
you,
about what's
what
happening
about
in
Hamas
the West Bank?
Digging tunnels and bunkers
Again, you bring
and
it,
command
the,
centers
listen,
under
your
those
vendetta
hospitals.
With Hamas is not a collective issue. Sir, your vendetta with Hamas, whatever it may be, is not a collective issue. Again,
it's not
this
a
is
vendetta
older,
with
this
Hamas.
Is bigger
Hamas,
than Hamas
is a criminal,
West,
is a criminal
is Hamas
dangerous
in the West
terrorist
Bank?
Organization.
You
we,
bring,
have to,
you,
we have to
can
deal
we,
with
Can
them.
We try and exercise... Pierce, can we just try one last thing? Can we
well,
try
I wanted to say, actually, to your credit...
To
listen,
from the
to, let me just say, to your credit to both of you, I've done lots of interviews and debates in the last few weeks, most of which have descended into slanging matches. You two have managed to avoid that for the main and Mr. Bay, and I appreciate the way you've allowed each other to speak and have your say. I think we get a lot further in trying to understand the complexities of the situation and, indeed, the passions on both sides, and I think you've both articulated those very well. So thank you very much indeed for joining me. I appreciate it.